First of all, I'd like to say thank you again for joining us. I want you to take me through your journey as a young girl and your love for animals, because I have a story that's gonna break your heart about pets.
Oh.
That is my story, but I want to know what the young Carol felt, how she fell in love with animals.
I've had cats my whole life, and the very first photograph that I ever remember seeing of me as a baby, my mother was holding me and my father was holding a little kitten. And it wasn't until probably a year or so ago that People magazine asked me for some pictures of me when I was a kid. And so I pulled it out of the scrapbook, and on the back it said that the cat's name was Tiger, which I thought was pretty
No.
But my love of cats really was of small cats, not of big cats. And when I was 8 years old, my grandmother told me that my cat had to go to the animal shelter with her kittens. And she said that the shelter was going to find them all a new home and they were going to be so happy. And then I discovered that most of the cats who end up in shelters end up being killed due to overpopulation. And once I discovered that as an 8 or 9 year old kid, I felt like that was my life's mission, was to end the euthanasia of healthy cats and kittens in shelters. So I worked like crazy from the time I was a child. I gathered up all the kids in the neighborhood. We sold lemonade and popcorn. We washed trailers. We washed cars. We did lawn work. I sold Amway door to door. And I felt like I had to raise so much money because this was going to be such a huge, expensive project to try and save all these cats and kittens. And I even was arguing with my father by the time I was 15 because I wanted to go to work because I knew I needed to raise all this money. And he kept saying, stay in school, get a college education, and then you can go work. And due to a misunderstanding that I had with my mother, I ended up leaving home at the age of 15. And so I worked often 3 jobs at a time, trying to build up a pool of money to take care of cats, and then built up a real estate business. And by the time I was in my 30s, well, actually, when I was 17, I started rescuing bobcats that had been hit by cars.
Wow.
Vets can fix them up in 30 minutes or so, but then you're talking months of rehab to send them back to the wild. You know what I'm realizing is I have this headset in, but I say something.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
It's not coming through the headset.
It's okay.
All right. I
This looks
couldn't
better anyway.
hear it very well. So I started rescuing bobcats when I was 17. And then when my husband and I were at an auction when I was in my 30s, is when we started rescuing cats who had been bred in captivity. So bobcats and Canada lynx and Siberian lynx.
So in the auctions, you guys would bid and win the cats, and then you would rehabilitate them and let them go.
No, when I was 17, I was going to vets' offices a lot because I thought this was going to be my life, working with veterinarians and saving domestic cats. And
Yeah.
since I was there all the time, they said, this cat came in, it got hit by a car, I had a broken leg, I fixed the leg, but now it's going to need months of rehab. So they would send the cats home with me, I'd rehab them and release them. And so I'd been doing that from the time that I was 17 until I was in my 30s. But when I was in my 30s, when I was married to Don, we were in real estate together buying property. And we would go to these auctions and buy llamas because you could turn llamas loose on big tracts of land and they clear about eye level, which is great. And then you just move them to the next piece of property. So that's why we were at the auctions. And it was at one of those auctions that a man came in with a 6-month-old bobcat that his wife didn't want
That's
anymore.
the one.
This is
Wow.
Ben Song, yeah. I mean, she was a year older than a year old in this picture, but she was
In
6 months
that picture.
old. And the guy next to me started bidding on her. And I said, when that cat grows up, she's going to tear your face off because there is nothing more wicked than a wild bobcat. And he said, I'm a taxidermist. I'm just going to club her in the head in the parking lot and make a den decoration out of her. And so I started crying, and my husband started bidding. And so we brought her home. But there were 3 reasons why she couldn't be released. One is she was born in captivity, and the only cats that are legal to release are the ones that were born in the wild. And she was born in a different state. So even if she had been born in the wild in Ohio, I can't release her in Florida. And the people that had her before us had declawed her, which is taking off the ends of their paws, so she couldn't hunt. So she ended up staying with us, but she was horrible as a pet, as you might imagine. And so my husband called around trying to find a mate for her that she wouldn't be terrorizing. And a guy said he would sell us a kitten to raise up with her, but we had to come in person. And when we got there, it turned out to be a fur farm. And that's
no way.
Yeah, that's how we came home with 56 bobcats, Canada lynx, and Siberian lynx, because nobody was going to be killed for their fur.
And where did you keep all of these? Well, and how big a car did you guys bring to that guy's house?
It was a van. And I had my daughter, who was 12 at the time, and a little friend of hers from school, because we thought we were going there to get one or two cats. And so we were not prepared for 56. And these were all kittens. So we took all the kittens the first year. The next year, we went back and got all of the adults. So there were 28 cats the second year. And then the third year, we bought all of the cats off of another fur farm. So there were 22 there. And the deal we made with each one of the fur farmers was that we would pay top dollar for the cats as long as they didn't kill cats again for their fur. And so they held good to their word. They bred foxes and mink, but not cats.
So now you've got all these cats. Now you're in the cat rescue business overnight. Where do you take them all?
They came home with me initially. So we were on almost 5 acres at the time. And I'm allergic to cats. So we had to, I had already pulled all of the carpets out of my house and no curtains or anything. And most of our furniture was like wrought iron metal because of my allergies. And so we just built inside the house rows and rows and rows of cages for these cats. And then I had all of our people from our real estate business coming over, and we would sit around and feed all of those babies. And then 4 hours later, it's time to do it all again. And so we were just feeding these cats around the clock for weeks on end and building out into the yard, you know, bigger, more spacious enclosures. And as we looked around at this, we thought, you know, with 56 of them, we can't put them all on 5 acres. So we had a piece of property down the road from us about 5 miles away that was 40 acres. And so we started building really big enclosures out there and moving them out there, which is where the sanctuary is now. And now it's 57 acres because I bought land around us.
What do you say, would you say the biggest misconception is about cats, whether it's domestic cats or big cats?
Biggest misconception. I think one of the things that surprised me the most is how similar domestic cats and big cats are. And our veterinarian would always say that our big cats were easier for her to deal with than people's domestic cats. And she said the reason for that is your domestic cat, if you're trying to take its temperature or give it a pill, it's so small that it feels like it has to prove itself. It has to fight back. Whereas if the cat is like 3 times bigger than you, they're like, eh. They just, you know, they know that they're at the top of the food chain and they don't have to give you a lot of grief about it.
That's amazing. So whenever I think of tiger, it took me a long time to realize that tigers are mainly from India and Siberia, right? Mm-hmm. When you have cats in the big cats in the USA, do they draw a lot of attention when people come over to want to see how the cats are, if they're not in a zoo type of scenario? Because I hate zoos. I think zoos are very inhumane to animals. I think the whole concept of zoos is outdated. And I'm because in South Africa, there's a lot of game farms. So I respect people in game farms and lion parks that keep the animals roaming around and allow tourists to come and see them or kids to come and learn. And then the animals can continue with their lifestyles, right? So I think you've done a lot in bringing Siberian cats and obviously cats that are from India, which are tigers, to America and people experiencing them close by. Have you seen how people's perception of those animals has changed ever since?
Well, I'm glad to hear you say what you do about zoos, because I too hate zoos. And all of the cats that are at Big Cat Rescue were born in captivity. And I was going to say they're all born in the United States, but that's not quite true. Almost all of them were born in the United States. So the lions and tigers who were born in the United States, you can't release those into India or Siberia or the places where they live, because they're really not native to that place. And unfortunately, any big cat who has been bred for life in a cage, it's illegal to release them in the wild, and it wouldn't be ethical because it takes their mother like a year and a half on the smaller cats, up to 3 or 4 years with the bigger cats, for them to teach their cubs how to hunt and how to stay away from people. And so all of these cats that are being bred in the United States and are being handled by people and are close proximity to people, if you were to release a cat like that into the wild illegally, it would come right up to people and get into trouble, maybe kill somebody. So there's a lot of reasons why that can't happen. When I said there's a few cats who weren't born in the United States, we work with a team called Animal Defenders International. And what they do is they go around the world trying to stop circus acts from using big cats. And so when they have success in a country like Peru or Guatemala, and the government decides to ban circuses, they don't want the governments to be stuck holding the bag with all of these lions and tigers that then nobody wants. And so they place them into sanctuaries. So some of our cats have come from Guatemala and Peru, but they were tigers and they should have been in India or in Russia, not in Guatemala or Peru or the US. They don't belong in any of these cages. So, my primary goal is that there not be any cats in cages anywhere because they don't belong in cages. And we have cats in cages here because we rescue them from horrific situations. But we've spent the last 30 years trying to change the laws so that people can't buy them or breed them or bring them into captivity for exhibition or for any kind of shows or any of those kinds of horrible things. They just shouldn't be in cages at all. So my happiest day will be the day I can actually tear the last of these cages down and protect them in the wild, which is where they belong. We'll still do rehab and release for native wild cats. So those cats, it is legal if they were born in the wild to release them back to the wild. But here in the US, that's only bobcats and cougars.
You're absolutely right. I think humans' need for entertainment by wild animals is so primitive and so brutal. I think it should not be allowed at all. And I was watching this one TV show this morning, and they were talking about tracking of, it was actually on CNN, they were talking about tracking of sharks. Mm-hmm. And in South Africa, in the East Coast, in Durban side, we have the biggest population of sharks over there. So they're talking to these conservationists about what they do to prevent sharks or shark attacks from happening, to separate them from surfers. And that's when I realized how much people are dedicating their lives to preserving the lives of animals and humans alike, unbeknownst to the humans themselves. And the marine biologist said, you can see the healthiness of the ocean by how many sharks there are, because how important they are to the ecosystem. And on another occasion, I watched how conservationists in India were encouraging people to move out of the areas where the tigers lived and go further into where they could do agriculture and leave the tigers to roam freely, instead of the people who are in India in the rural areas trying to kill the tigers because they're attacking their livestock. I think once we draw a clear parallel between wildlife and the habitat that the wildlife needs versus how humans are encroaching into the habitat of the wildlife and then seeing the wildlife as a threat. With elephants, it's the same way as well here in Africa and in some parts in India as well, where farmers would say they're trampling on their crops or they're eating their crops. But my argument is still the Kruger National Park was always their habitat until someone ring-fenced it and decided it's my backyard.
Yeah. You know, I think that we are right on the precipice of a huge change, because people like you are starting to say, these animals don't belong in cages. I don't want to teach my child that it's okay to take the freedom away from these magnificent animals and hold them captive just for your amusement. That's a horrible message to teach our children. And no wonder we have no respect for nature or for each other. But imagine if we were to put 360 degree internet streaming cameras in the wild where these cats actually live. Maybe there's one by the den site. Maybe there's one down by the favorite watering hole. They have certain trails and paths that they take all the time. So you put these cameras all around through those areas, and then you use the blockchain and smart contracts so that people who want to see those cameras pay for it, like a subscription to a cable service like Netflix or Hulu. And then you put your headset on and you're seeing those animals in the wild doing what they do naturally. And maybe 80% of the money from those feeds actually goes back to those local economies, so that the people who have to live with lions and tigers and jaguars and all of those other big cats, everybody becomes a game warden who wants to protect that money coming in, because then they don't have to cut down the forest in order to do agriculture. They can have the same lifestyle as everybody in the world because they have the most magnificent product out there, the thing we all want to see, which are these wild animals doing what they do in the wild. So I think it's a way of really creating an equal playing field for people around the world and saving our planet, because we're just destroying it otherwise.
I also feel, we were having this discussion with a friend of mine, and we're talking about the impact of alcohol lobbying and cigarette lobbying and how much it infiltrated entertainment to a point where you'd be watching a movie when you were 10 years old and people would be having a drink or puffing a cigarette. But then you'd see someone with a cat in their house or a dog, but you'd never see them interacting with a wild animal in a peaceful manner, right? And then you have now people that think, I always see these images from Dubai where people have taken cheetahs and pumas and kept them, and that makes me feel so sad. And I feel like popular culture is not doing enough to let people know that wild animals belong in the wild. And I think The Lion King, funny enough, did that for me as a kid, because I started seeing lions differently. The lion pride, how they're the king of the jungle, but they don't rule with force, and the scavengers and this. That movie alone, in the last, which is now almost 20 years old, if I'm not mistaken, has done a lot for nature. But why isn't there more of that? Why don't we see in popular culture and in cartoons and what children are watching, animals being portrayed as different? Not when someone falls over a boat, a shark gets them, you know, not when someone is walking alone, a wolf chases them. You know, there's demonizing and villainizing of animals that is so prevalent in popular culture and cinematic culture that I think goes unchecked. And I think as parents, we need to stop our children from consuming such material and demystifying what popular culture is seen as low-hanging fruit to make a movie happen, and horror to be into the movie by making an animal a villain. Like, I hate werewolves, because I'm like, wolves don't need the publicity that you're giving them right now. This is bad publicity. You think that the worst thing that could happen is a human turning into a wolf that wants to eat other humans?
You know, you brought out something I had never really thought about with Lion King, because one of the things I think that Lion King really brought home was how there was this family relationship between all of these different characters. And it made people understand, or children at least understand, that these animals have their own lives and their own agenda and their own dramas that are going on that are totally theirs that we need to respect. So I think you're right that that did have a huge impact. And I think the negative impact from social media is one of the worst things. Like you mentioned, the cheetahs in Dubai. And what people don't realize when they see those images of people with a cheetah in their house or in their Corvette or whatever, those are babies. They can only use those animals like that until they're maybe 2 years old, 3 years old, and then they become adults, and that's when they get rid of them. And even though they might be full size, like I have a lion out here, she was 500 pounds by the time she was about 3 years old, but she was still a baby until she was five. So even though she looked like an adult, and it might look impressive if I walked her around on a leash, which I didn't, but you know, it was possible because she was a baby and she would have allowed that until she became an adult. And so people are showing off that way on social media to get attention and to get likes. And yet that's not at all the, you know, it's a fantasy. There's no truth behind that fantasy of having this lasting relationship with the apex predator.
I think to your country's credit and to people like you, conservationists, I think if you look at the work that Teddy Roosevelt did for conservation by making sure that acres and millions of acres of land actually remains untouched and the Yellowstone National Park still exists, because obviously I think your country has learned its lesson by almost annihilating the bison and the beaver population. now you guys have stricter rules in how people can hunt, hunting season for ducks and bucks and bears and all of that. I still don't condone it, but I think that with tighter, strict measures, you guys far surpass a lot of people in making sure that the wild remains wild and hunting remains hunting, but within certain parameters that allows the nature to be nature, right? Obviously, the first prize would be leave them alone.
My daughter's in Yellowstone right now. She's took an RV out there for 2 weeks.
That's my dream place to go to. I want to spend a month in Yellowstone National Park and in the Smoky Mountains.
Oh, yeah, that's beautiful too.
So what do you say to that? Would you say your country has done quite a bit for nature conservation by making sure that millions of acres of land remains untouched?
I think there have been moments in time where they have done things that were smart like that, like setting aside land. I think that our country has also done some horrible things to wildlife, like shooting wolves from helicopters and the mismanagement of the wild horse population to where they have to round the horses up and kill them because they haven't figured out a good way to sterilize them to keep their numbers down. The fact that the Florida panther has nearly gone extinct here in Florida, and now we have some god-awful disease that is wiping out the Florida panther and the bobcats here, and they can't even figure out what it is, except that it's some kind of coronavirus that showed up right around the same time as COVID did, which is a coronavirus. And so it's just, I think there's so much more that our country needs to do, but not just our country, the whole world needs to take this seriously, because we're in this pandemic because of the fact that we have been so disrespectful to Mother Nature. She's sent us all to our rooms.
Simultaneously. Globally.
Yeah.
You know what I admire about, the more I talk to you about your activism, is the commitment that you have to activism. Because right now in the world, we talk about a lot of social issues that people are activists to, but not committed activists to. You know, you'd have a conversation over dinner or coffee or online, it would end there. And then you never see people really doubling down on what they really feel and what they stand for. And one of those examples was what's happening right now in Kabul and the pledges that people have made, but they haven't materialized in dollar form. And I feel like that is that where we are as humans right now, is it's so easy for us to commit to a cause because it's fashionable. And when we leave that conversation, we leave the commitment behind.
I heard somebody else talking about this the other day, and I thought it was really on target. She was saying that because social media makes it possible for a situation like Kabul to make it around the world in an instant, all of a sudden, in a single day, everybody knows about what's happening in Kabul. And everybody says, I want to fix that. And they all jump in and they all say they're going to fix it. But tomorrow, there's a volcano somewhere. And then everybody's like, oh, we all know about that. Let's go fix that. Well, let's go fix this. Well, and people are just constantly being bombarded with all of the things that need fixing out there. And yet they're not staying focused on any one thing to actually get it done. And so I do think that one of the things that I've been good about doing is saying, if it's not a cat, it's not my problem. So people come to me with stuff all the time about there's these wolves in trouble, there's these elephants in trouble. And it's like, I'm going to stay focused on the cats. Because the cats are the apex predators. And if you have a healthy population of tigers, then the entire ecosystem is healthy underneath that. And so if I can just stay focused on one species, then I feel like I can benefit a lot of other animals.
Sort of like the sharks, right? For the ocean.
Yeah.
Isn't it weird that whenever human atrocities or human displacement happens anywhere in the world, people hardly think of the animals that get affected by it as well, because it is, after all, an ecosystem, right? Do we see humanitarian organizations jumping in and trying to figure out what happens to the pets that get left behind by these people or the places that these animals feed from or live in? And we never see that. We never hear much of it, right?
Yeah, I think with domestic cats domestic pets here in the United States, the Humane Society of the United States, if there's a hurricane or a fire or whatever, they're very quick to show up on the scene and try to make sure that all of the animals are rescued. And they set up these little camps where people can find their animals later on by, you know, going online and identifying them. So I think they've done a good job of that. But I don't know of anybody that does that for wild animals to the scale necessary. I mean, like when Australia burned down and all the koalas and wallabies and kangaroos and such were in trouble, I don't know that there was any organization big enough even to go in and fix that.
You know, speaking of villainization of animals, this thought just crossed my mind now. Why do we do it? Why is it so, and I'm just asking a rhetorical question now, we can discuss this. Why is it so easy for us to do it? I look at the orca, right? Which is commonly known as the killer whale. I'm like, why did we decide to give that beautiful creature that name? And how whales in the course of, and bluefin tuna, and how they got hunted for just being themselves. You know, when you think of how people used to use the oil from a whale to light street lights in London, for example, or in cities, and how we wiped out the beavers just for the beaver trade was just because of fashion, because of the hats. Why is it so easy for the naming of animals sometimes, like the killer whale, to give it a name that just villainizes the poor creature and without us? And the more I watch orcas in the wild, I realize there's nothing killer about them.
The only difference
is they eat seals, and whereas other whales eat tons and tons of fish. I don't see orcas eating tons and tons of seals, and seals eat fish. But I think, who decided that we're going to name these specific ones killer whales?
I have no idea, because it's not a cat.
I love that answer. So what do you see the future of cats in the wild and in captivity being from here onwards? Do you think there's more awareness now? Do you think people care more now? Do you think there is a future for the two to coexist, for them to be in a sanctuary like yours, which is not in the wild, but still simulates the wild and brings them close enough to humans for humans to understand what the animals are about, the majesticness of those animals?
Well, we wouldn't even be open to the public if it weren't for two things. One, it helped to fund this work that we do to try and end the captivity of big cats. And two, at the end of all of our tours, what we would ask people to do, we'd walk them around for an hour and a half talking about why cats don't belong in cages. And then at the end of the tour, we would take them into our gift shop and have them call Congress and ask them to support the Big Cat Public Safety Act. And the Big Cat Public Safety Act is a federal bill that bans the cub petting, and it phases out private ownership of big cats. And I think we'll get that bill passed this year. And so when that bill passes, then it turns off the taps. There are hundreds of cubs that are being bred for people to have their picture made with them, and they can only use them until they're about 3 months old. And then they can take a finger off a kid. And so they turn from being very lucrative to being a huge liability. And so when they dump those cubs into private owners' backyards, basements, crappy little roadside zoos, or sometimes they just kill them, all of that is creating a legal smokescreen for the illegal acts involved in poaching and taking these animals out of the wild. And so we have to stop and turn off that flood of animals in the US before we can do anything to save them in the wild. And I think as long as people can pay to go see a cat in a cage, they're never going to spend the money necessary to save that animal in the wild. So my goal is to make it so that the only way anybody ever gets to see a big cat is in virtual reality, wearing a headset. You know, even the parks that you mentioned, I'm not crazy about them, because every time I see images of people that are on a tiger safari, you'll see this tiger out there trying to run its life and raise its kids and do its hunting, and it's being followed by 20 Jeeps full of people with cameras. How do you do your life as a tiger when you've constantly got this barrage of people surrounding you like a bunch of paparazzi? And so if the cameras are there, but the people aren't there, and we all get to see what goes on, then I think that's how we actually make it possible for those cats to live in the wild. And again, by making that the only place or the only way that people can see them, then we have a chance of saving them.
You know, on that point, you're actually right. I saw this one piece that said during coronavirus, because of lack of traveling, people were unable to go to Kenya to watch cheetahs in the wild. The population grew because when the mother cheetah goes to hunt and makes a calling for the young ones to come, now they can actually hear her, instead of before her voice was drowned out by the jeeps and the tourists and the clicking cameras. And I thought that was so significant.
I did not know that, but that sure makes sense.
Yeah. You know, if there's one thing I can say now, I've learned from over a year of doing this show with my friend Josh over here, was the fact that narrative is a strong thing, but it can always be broken by the truth. And I say that because of the popular show that we all watched. And I can see that your activism and your kindness and your commitment to these animals was forever going to make it easy for someone to make you a villain, because you stood for the truth and you're fighting for these animals and you really mean it. Because from that to still continuing doing it and bringing so much light, and now I understand why you have so many fans and why so many people during even the documentary itself were sticking up for you. Now I finally get it, just from talking to you alone. I get the fact that your heart is in the right place and it's forever going to be there. And I just want to be part of that in a small way or in a big way.
Well, thank you so much for that. I was reading a quote from Plato yesterday, and I'm going to mess up this quote because I don't remember it exactly.
But I do it all the time. Please go ahead.
He pretty much said that you will be villainized if you speak the truth. And it was like, well, that's probably going to become my new favorite phrase.
Yes. But you see, I think it's from what you said, and when you started feeling this true love for the cause, is you couldn't fake the emotion at that age. You grew up not seeing them as they were not a business to you. They were not a commodity. They were not an item. They were creatures that needed your help. And for years and years, you believed the same thing. And in life, you will find people want to take advantage of that. But here you are, you're still standing and still going strong and making a big difference. And for that, I want to say I'm proud of you. And thank you so much for this.
Thank you.
You've gained a new fan. I'm your biggest fan now.
Well, I appreciate that.
Is there anything that our listeners can do, or a place that they can go to, or social media accounts that they can follow to help the cause?
If you have listeners in the U.S., they can go to bigcatact.com and contact their member of Congress. We make it really easy. It'll send an email, a tweet, and they can make a call. If they're not from the U.S., then I would say the most important thing people can do is whenever they see those images on social media of somebody showing off with a cub or a big cat, call them out on it. Ask them, where's that cat's mother? How old is that cat? A year from now, when you can't play with that cat anymore, tell me what you're going to do with that cat. And when people start getting called on the carpet for their bad behavior, I think they'll stop.
Thank you so very much, Carol. Thank you.